Real bad, Signor. They need a pedicure.
Do it.
Jack flew into action. It's a rare sword that can remove caked-on pond scum, shave off calluses, trim gnarly toenails, and leave a pair of dwarf feet shiny clean without, 1, killing said dwarf, 2, cutting off the flailing feet of said dwarf, or 3, cutting off the legs of the inheritee who was holding said dwarf. And all the while singing, "Can't Feel My Face." Jack is truly special.
All right," Anvari shrieked. "No more torture! I'll show you where the treasure is! It's right under that rock!"
He pointed frantically to pretty much everything until his finger came to rest at a boulder near the edge of the waterfall. "Traps," Hearthstone signed. "Anvari," I said, "if I move that boulder, what sort of traps will I spring?"
"None!"
"What if I move it using your head as a lever, then?"
"All right, it's booby-trapped! Exploding hexes, tripwires to catapults!"
"I knew it," I said. "How do you disarm them? All of them?" The dwarf squinted with concentration. At least, I hoped that's what he was doing. Otherwise, he was making a deposit in his moss diaper.
"It's done," he sighed miserably. "I have disarmed all the traps."
I glanced at Hearthstone. The elf stretched out his hands, probably testing our surroundings for magic the way I could sense eels and guppies. Hey, we all have different talents. Hearth nodded. "Safe." With Anvari still dangling from my hand, I walked to the boulder and flipped it over with my foot. Inheritee strength is also a good talent. Under the rock, a canvas-lined pit was filled with... Wow. I didn't usually care about money. I'm not about that. But my saliva glands went into overdrive when I saw the sheer volume of gold. Bracelets, necklaces, coins, daggers, rings, cups, monopoly tokens. I wasn't sure what the value of gold per ounce was these days, but I estimated I was looking at about a gajillion dollars worth, give or take a bazillion. Jack squealed. "Oh, look at those little daggers! They're adorable!" Hearthstone's eyes regained their alertness. All that gold seemed to have the same effect on him as waving a cup of coffee under his nose. "Too easy," he signed. "Must be a catch." "Anvari," I said. "If your name means careful one, why are you so easy to rob?"
"I know," he sobbed. "I'm not careful. I get robbed all the time. I think the name is ironic. My mother was a cruel woman."
"So this hoard keeps getting stolen, but you keep getting it back? Because of that ring you mentioned?"
"What ring? Lots of rings in that pile. Take them."
"No, the super magic one. Where is it?"
Probably in the pile somewhere. Go look."
Anvari quickly pulled a ring off his finger and slipped it into his diaper. His hands were so filthy, I wouldn't have noticed the ring at all if he hadn't tried to hide it.
"You just dropped it down your pants," I said.
"No, I didn't." "Jack, I think this dwarf wants a full Brazilian waxing."
"No!" Anvari wailed. "All right, yes, my magic ring is in my pants. But please don't take it. Getting it back is always such a hassle." "I told you, it's cursed. You don't want to end up like a lottery winner, do you?"
I turned to Hearth. "What do you think?"
"Tell him, Mr. Elf," said Anvari. "You're obviously an elf of learning. You know your runes. I bet you know the story of Fafnir, eh? Tell your friend this ring will bring you nothing but trouble."
Hearth gazed into the distance as if reading a list on some heavenly whiteboard. -10 gold for bringing home a cursed ring. +10 gajillion gold for stealing a gajillion gold. He signed, "Ring is cursed, but also key to treasure. Without ring, treasure will never be enough. We'll always come up short." I looked at the jacuzzi-sized stash of gold.
"I don't know, man. That seems like plenty to cover your wereguild rug."
Hearth shook his head. "It will not be. Ring is dangerous, but we have to take it just in case. If we don't use it, we can return it." I twisted the dwarf to face me. "Sorry, Anvari." Jack laughed.
"Hey, that rhymes too."
"What did the elf say?" Anvari demanded. "I can't read those gestures."
He waved his grubby hands, accidentally signing "Donkey Waiter Pancake" in ASL. I was losing patience with the old slime bucket, but I did my best to translate Hearth's message. Anvari's moss-green eyes darkened. He bared his teeth, which looked like they hadn't been flossed since zombies inspired the Mayflower Compact.
"You're a fool then, Mr. Elf," he growled. "The ring will come back to me eventually. It always does. In the meantime, it will cause death and misery to whoever wears it. And don't think it will solve your problems either. This won't be the last time you have to come home. You've only delayed a much more dangerous reckoning."
The change in Anvari's tone unnerved me even more than his change from grouper to dwarf. No more wailing or crying. He spoke with cold certainty, like a hangman explaining the mechanics of a noose. Hearthstone didn't look rattled. He wore the same expression he'd had at his brother's cairn, as if he was reliving a tragedy that had happened long ago and couldn't be changed. "The ring," he signed. The gesture was so obvious even Edvari understood it.
"Fine." The dwarf glared at me. "You won't escape the curse either, human. Soon enough you'll see what comes of stolen gifts."
The hairs on my arm stood up. "What do you mean?" He grinned evilly.
"Oh, nothing. Nothing at all."
Anvari did the shimmy shimmy shake. The ring dropped out of the leg hole of his diaper.
"One magic ring," he announced. "Complete with curse."
"There is no way," I said, "that I am picking that up."
"Got it!"
Jack dove in and made like a spatula, scooping the ring out of the mud with the flat of his blade. Anvari watched wistfully as my sword played paddleball, flipping the ring from one side of his blade to the other.
"The usual deal?" the dwarf asked. "You spare my life and take everything I own?"
"The usual sounds great," I said. "What about all the gold in the pit? How do we carry it?"
Anvari scoffed. "Amateurs. The canvas lining of the pit is a big magical sack. Pull the drawstring and voila! I have to keep the stash ready for quick getaways for those few times I avoid getting robbed."
Hearthstone crouched next to the pit. Sure enough, poking from a hole in the hem of the canvas was a loop of string. Hearth pulled it, and the bag snapped closed, shrinking to the size of a backpack. Hearth held it up for me to see. A gajillion dollars worth of gold in a super convenient carry-on size.
"Now honor your part of the deal," Anvari demanded.
I dropped him.
"Humph!"
The old dwarf rubbed his neck.
"Enjoy your demise, amateurs. I hope you have pain and suffering and win 2 lotteries."
With that vile curse, he jumped back into his pond and disappeared.
"Hey, senor," called Jack. "Heads up!"
"Don't you dare!" He flipped the ring at me. I caught it out of reflex.
"Oh, gross!"
Seeing as it was a magic ring, I half expected some big Lord of the Rings moment when it landed in my hand. Cold, heavy whispering, swirling gray mist, a line of Nazgul doing the Watusi. None of that happened. The ring just sat there, looking very much like a gold ring, albeit one that had recently fallen from a 1,000-year-old dwarf's moss diaper. I slipped the ring into my pants pocket, then studied the circle of slime residue on my palm. My hand will never feel clean again. Hearthstone shouldered his expensive new backpack like a gajillionaire Santa Claus. He glanced at the sun, which was already past its zenith. I hadn't realized just how long we'd been trekking through the wilds of Mr. Alderman's backyard. "We should go," Hearth signed. "Father will be waiting." Chapter 28. And if you order now, you also get this cursed ring. Father was waiting, all right. He paced in the living room, sipping golden juice from a silver goblet while Inga stood nearby, waiting for a spill to happen. When we walked in, Mr. Alderman turned toward us, his face a mask of cold anger.
"Where have you..."
His isosceles jaw dropped. I guess he didn't expect to see us soaked in sweat, covered in grass and twigs, our slime-cake shoes leaving slug trails across his white marble floor. Mr. Alderman's expression was one of the best rewards I'd ever gotten, right up there with dying and going to Valhalla. Hearthstone plopped his canvas bag on the floor with a muffled clatter. He signed, "Payment," palm up, brushing one finger toward his dad like he was flicking a coin at him. The way Hearth did it made it look like an insult. I like that. Mr. Alderman forgot that he wasn't supposed to acknowledge sign language. He asked,
"Payment? But how?"
"Come upstairs and we'll show you." I glanced behind Alderman, where Inga stood wide-eyed, a grin slowly spreading across her face. "We've got a demon skin rug to cover." Ah, the sound of golden monopoly tokens cascading across a fur rug. There is nothing sweeter, I promise you. Hearthstone tipped over the canvas sack and walked around the rug, hosing it down with a torrent of wealth. Mr. Alderman's face got paler. In the doorway, Inga jumped up and down, clapping with excitement, heedless of the fact that she hadn't paid her master for the privilege. When the last of the gold was out, Hearthstone stepped back and threw down the empty bag. He signed, "Ware Guild Paid." Mr. Alderman looked stunned. He did not say, "Good job, son," or, "Oh boy, I'm richer," or, "Did you rob the elfish treasury department?" He crouched and inspected the pile, coin by coin, dagger by dagger. "There are miniature dogs and steam trains," he noted.
"Why?"
I coughed. "I think previous owner liked board games. Solid gold board games.
Hmm, Alderman continued his inspection, making sure that the entire rug was covered. His expression turned more and more sour. Did you leave the property to acquire this?
Because I did not give you permission.
Nope, I said. You own the wilderness behind the backyard, right?
Yes, he does, Inga said. The master glared at her, and she hastily added, because, Mr. Alderman is a very important man.
Look, sir, I said, it's obvious Hearthstone succeeded. The rug is covered. Just admit it.
I will be the judge, he snarled. This is all about responsibility, something you younger folks do not understand.
You want Hearthstone to fail, don't you?
Alderman scowled. I expect him to fail. There is a difference. This boy earned his punishment. I am not convinced he has the potential to pay it off.
I almost screamed. Hearthstone has been paying his entire life. I wanted to pour Anvari's treasure straight down Alderman's throat and see if that convinced him of his son's potential.
Hearthstone brushed his fingers against my arm. He signed, Calm, ready with the ring. I tried to control my breathing. I didn't understand how Hearth could endure his father's insults. He'd had a lot of practice, sure, but the old elf was intolerable. I was glad Jack was back in pendant form, because I would have ordered him to give Mr. Alderman the full Brazilian treatment. In the pocket of my jeans, Anvari's ring was so light I could barely feel it. I had to resist the urge to check on it every few seconds. I realized that was one reason I felt so irritated with Mr. Alderman. I wanted him to say that the debt was paid. I didn't want Hearthstone to be right about needing the ring, too. I kind of wanted to keep it. No, wait, that's not right. I wanted to return it to Anvari so we didn't have to deal with the curse. My thoughts on the subject were starting to get muddled, as though my head was full of river sludge.
Aha! Mr. Alderman cried triumphantly. He pointed at the top of the rug, at the nape of its neck where the fur was thickest. A single blue hair sprouted from the treasure like a stubborn weed.
Oh, come on, I said. That'll just take a minor adjustment.
I shifted the treasure so the hair was covered, but as soon as I succeeded, another hair popped up from the spot where I had taken the gold. It was like the same stupid blue hair was following me around, defying my efforts.
This is no problem, I insisted. Let me get out my sword, or if you have a pair of scissors...
The debt is not paid, Mr. Alderman insisted.
Unless you can cover that last hair right now with more gold, I'm going to charge you for disappointing me and wasting my time. Say, half this treasure.
Hearthstone turned to me, no surprise in his face, just glum resignation. The ring. A wave of murderous resentment washed over me. I didn't want to give up the ring. But then I looked at the whiteboards around the room, all the rules and menu items, all the expectations that Mr. Alderman expected Hearthstone not to meet. The curse of Anvari's ring was pretty strong. It whispered to me, telling me to keep it and get filthy rich. But the urge to see Hearthstone free of his father, reunited with Blitzen, and out of this toxic house, that was stronger. I brought out our secret last bit of treasure. A hungry light kindled in Mr. Alderman's space alien eyes.
Very well. Place it on the pile.
Father, Hearthstone signed. Warning, the ring is cursed.
I will not listen to your hand gestures.
You know what he's saying, I held up the ring. This thing taints whoever owns it. It'll ruin you. Heck, I've only had it for a few minutes and it's already messing with my mind. Take the gold that's already on the rug, call the debt paid, show some forgiveness, and we'll return this ring to its previous owner. Mr. Alderman laughed bitterly.
Forgiveness? What can I buy with forgiveness?
Will it bring Anderon back to me? Personally, I would have punched the old dude in the face, but Hearthstone stepped toward his father. He looked genuinely worried. Curse of F-A-F-N-I-R, he signed. Do not. Anvari had mentioned that name. It sounded vaguely familiar, but I couldn't place it. Maybe Fafnir was a Powerball lottery winner? Hearthstone gestured, please, hand flat against the chest, making a circle. It struck me that please was just a more relaxed, less angry version of sorry. The two elves stared at each other across the pile of gold. I could almost feel Alfheim swaying in the branches of the world tree. Despite everything Alderman had done to him, Hearthstone still wanted to help his father. He was making one last effort to pull his dad out of a hole much deeper than Anvari's. No, Mr. Alderman decided. Pay the Wehrguild or stay in my debt. Both of you. Hearthstone bowed his head in defeat. He motioned at me to give up the ring. First, the Skofnung Stone, I said.
Let me see that you're keeping your side of the bargain. Alderman grunted. Inga, bring the Skofnung stone from its case. The security code is Greta.
Hearthstone flinched. I guessed Greta was his mother's name. The Hulder scurried off. For a few tense moments, Hearthstone, Alderman, and I stood around the rug and stared at each other. No one suggested a game of Monopoly. No one yelled, Yippee! And jumped in the pile of gold, though I'll admit I was tempted. Finally, Inga came back, the blue-gray whetstone cupped in her hands. She offered it to Alderman with a curtsy. Alderman took it and handed it to his son. I give this to you freely, Hearthstone, to do with as you please. Let its powers be yours. He glowered at me. Now the ring. I was out of reasons to delay, but it was still difficult. With a deep breath, I knelt and added Anvari's ring to the treasure, covering the last bit of fur. The deal is done, I said.
Eh? Alderman's gaze was fixed on the treasure.
Yes, yes, except for one thing. You promised me media exposure, Magnus Chase. I have arranged a little party for tonight. Inga!
The Hulder jumped.
Yes, sir. Preparations are coming along. All 400 guests have RSVP'd.
400? I asked. How did you have time to set that up? How did you know we'd succeed?
Ha! The crazy light in Mr. Alderman's eyes did not calm my nerves. I didn't know you'd succeed, and I didn't care. I planned on arranging parties every night while you stayed here, Magnus, preferably forever. But since you have paid the Wehrguild so quickly, we'll have to make tonight count. As for how, I am Alderman of House Alderman. No one would dare turn down my invitation.
Behind his back, Inga gave me a frantic nod and drew a line across her neck.
And now, Mr. Alderman snatched the cursed ring out of the hoard. He placed it on his finger and held it out to admire it like someone newly engaged.
Yes, this will look lovely with my formal attire.
Hearthstone, I will expect you and your guest... Hearthstone, where are you going?
Apparently, Hearth had had enough of his father. With the Skofnung stone in one hand, he hauled Blitzen upright by the scarf harness and lugged him into the bathroom. A moment later, I heard the shower running.
I should go help them, I said.
What? Alderman snapped.
Yes, fine. Such a lovely ring.
Inga, make sure our young scoundrels are dressed appropriately for the party. And send some of the staff to help me with this gold. I must have every piece of treasure weighed and counted. And polished. It will look wonderful polished. And while you're at it...
I didn't want to leave Inga alone in the same room with Mr. Crazy Ring, but I was getting nauseated watching Alderman flirt with his fortune. I ran to join my friends in the bathroom.
The only thing more disturbing than a severed god's head in your bubble bath?
A bleeding granite dwarf in your shower.
Hearth propped Blitzen under the showerhead. As soon as the running water cascaded over Blitz's head, his form began to soften. His cold gray face darkened into warm brown flesh. Blood flowed from his wounded gut and swirled around the drain. His knees buckled. I lurched into the stall to hold him up. Hearthstone fumbled with the Skofnung stone. He pressed it against the gushing wound and Blitz gasped. The flow of blood stopped instantly.
I'm a goner, Blitz croaked. Don't worry about me, you crazy elf. Just...
He spit out water.
Why is it raining?
Hearthstone hugged him fiercely, crushing Blitz's face against his chest.
Hey, Blitz complained. Can't breathe here.
Hearth, of course, couldn't hear him and didn't seem to care. He rocked back and forth with the dwarf in his arms.
Okay, buddy, Blitz patted him weakly. There, there.
He looked up at me and silently asked several thousand questions with his eyes, including, why are the three of us taking a shower together? Why am I not dead? Why do you smell like pond scum? What is wrong with my elf? Once we were sure he'd fully unpetrified, Hearth shut off the water. Blitzen was too weak to move, so we slid him into a sitting position right there in the shower. Inga rushed into the bathroom with a stack of towels and some fresh clothes. From Hearth's bedroom came the sound of spilling coins, like a dozen slot machines paying out, punctuated by the occasional crazy laugh.
You might want to take your time in here, Inga warned us, glancing nervously behind her. It's a bit hectic out there.
Then she left, closing the door behind her. We did our best to get ourselves cleaned up. I used an extra belt to make a strap for the Skofnung stone and tied it around my waist, tucking my shirt over it so it wouldn't be too obvious if Mr. Alderman got a case of takesy-backsies. Blitzen's wound had closed nicely, leaving just a small white scar, but he bemoaned the damage to his suit, the sword slash in the vest, the heavy bloodstains.
No amount of lemon juice will get these out, he said. Once fabric turns to granite and back again, well, the discoloration is permanent.
I didn't bother pointing out that at least he was alive. I knew he was in shock and dealing with it by concentrating on things he understood and could fix, such as his wardrobe. We sat together on the bathroom floor. Blitzen used his mending kit to stitch together bath towels for extra Alfheim sun protection, while Hearthstone and I took turns filling him in on what had been happening. Blitzen shook his head in amazement.
You did all this for me? You crazy, wonderful idiots, you could have gotten yourselves killed. And Hearth, you subjected yourself to your father?
I never would have asked you to do that. You swore you'd never come back here, and for good reason.
I also swore to protect you, Hearth signed. My fault you were stabbed, and Samira's.
Stop that right now, Blitz said. It wasn't your fault or hers. You can't cheat a prophecy. That mortal wound was bound to happen. But now you fixed it, so we can stop worrying about it. Besides, if you want to blame someone, blame that fool Randolph. He glanced at me. No offense, kid, but I have a strong desire to murder your uncle with extreme prejudice.
No offense taken, I said. I'm tempted to help you.
And yet I remembered Randolph's horrified cry when he'd stabbed Blitzen, and the way he'd followed Loki like an abused dog. As much as I wanted to hate my uncle, I couldn't help feeling sorry for him. Now that I'd met Mr. Alderman, I was starting to realize that no matter how bad your family is, it could always be worse. Hearth finished bringing Blitzen up to speed in sign language, explaining how we'd robbed Anvari and been threatened with multiple Powerball jackpots.
You were both out of your minds to face that dwarf, Blitzen said. He's infamous in Nidavellir, even craftier and greedier than Atri Jr.
Could we please not mention him, I pleaded. I still had nightmares about the old dwarf who had challenged Blitz to a crafting contest last January. I never wanted to see another rocket-powered granny walker as long as I lived.
Blitzen frowned at Hearth.
And you say your father has the ring now?
Hearthstone nodded. I tried to warn him.
Yes, but still, that thing could warp its owner's mind beyond recognition.
After what happened to Hreidmar, Fafnir, Regan, and all those lottery winners, well, there's an endless list of people that ring has destroyed.
Who are they? I asked. Those people you mentioned.
Blitzen held up his bath towel creation, a sort of terry cloth burka with sunglasses taped over the eye holes.
Long, tragic story, kid. Lots of death. The important thing is, we must convince Mr. Alderman to give up that ring before it's too late. We have to stay at this party of his for a while, right? That'll give us a chance. Maybe he'll be in a good mood and we can make him see sense.
Hearthstone grunted. My father? Doubtful.
Yeah, I said. And if he won't see sense?
Then we run, Blitz said. And we hope Alderman doesn't.
From the next room, Inga called.
Mr. Hearthstone!
Her tone verged on panic. We stumbled out of the bath and found that Hearth's bedroom had been completely stripped. The mattress was gone. The whiteboards had been removed, leaving bright white shadows and only slightly less white walls. The pile of treasure and the blue fur rug had vanished as if the Wehrguild had never happened. Inga stood in the doorway, her bonnet askew on her head. Her face was flushed, and she was anxiously pulling tufts from the end of her tail.
Master Hearth, the guests have arrived. The party has started. Your father is asking for you, but...
Hearthstone signed. What's wrong? Inga tried to speak. No words came out. She shrugged helplessly, as if she could not describe the horrors she had witnessed at Mr. Alderman's mix and mingle.
It's probably best you see for yourself.
Chapter 29. Knock, knock. Alderman knew how to throw a party. He also knew how to throw things at a party. From the top of the staircase, we gazed down at a living room jammed with well-groomed elves in elegant white, gold, and silver outfits. Their pale eyes, fair hair, and expensive jewelry gleamed in the evening sunlight streaming through the windows. Dozens of Huldur servants moved through the crowd, offering drinks and hors d'oeuvres. And in all the cases and niches where artifacts and minerals were once displayed, piles of Anvari's treasure glittered, making the whole room look like a jewelry warehouse after a tornado. Above the fireplace mantel, across the foot of Anderon's portrait, hung a golden banner with the red letters, "Welcome Magnus Chase, son of Frey, sponsored by House Alderman." And under that, in smaller print, "Hearthstone has been brought back." Not returned, been brought back, as if the elfish marshal service had apprehended him and hauled him home in chains. Alderman himself circulated through the crowd at double speed.
tossing gold coins to his guests, accosting them with jewelry, and muttering, "Can you believe all this treasure? Amazing, isn't it? Would you like a golden choo-choo train? May I interest you in a dagger?" In his white tuxedo, with his wild eyes and brilliant smile, he looked like a diabolical maitre d' seating parties at Shea Mass Murder. His guests laughed nervously as he threw treasure at them. Once he passed, they muttered to one another, perhaps wondering how soon they could flee the party without seeming impolite. Alderman wove through the room, distributing golden trinkets, and the crowd moved away from him like cats avoiding an out-of-control Roomba. Behind us, Inga murmured, "Oh dear, he's getting worse." Hearthstone signed, "The ring is affecting him." I nodded, though I wondered how strained Mr. Alderman's sanity had already been. For decades he had been living off resentment, blaming Hearthstone for Andoron's death. Now suddenly, Hearthstone had freed himself from that debt. Anvari's ring simply moved in to fill the void with a whole bunch of crazy. Blitzen gripped the staircase with his gloved hands. "This isn't good." He was wearing his bath towel burka to protect himself from the Alfheim light. He'd explained to us that his usual pith helmet netting and sunscreen would not be sufficient, as he was still weak from petrification. Still, the outfit was a little disturbing. He looked like a miniature version of Cousin It from the Addams Family. "Aha!" Mr. Alderman spotted us on the stairs and grinned even wider. "Behold, my son and his companions. The dwarf, at least I assume that's the dwarf under those towels, and Magnus Chase, son of Frey." The crowd turned and looked up at us, emitting a fair number of oohs and ahs. I've never liked being the center of attention. I hated it at school, and later in Valhalla. I hated even more these glamorous elves ogling me like I was some delectable chocolate fountain that had just opened for business. "Yes, yes," Mr. Alderman cackled like a maniac. "All this treasure you see, my friends? That is nothing compared to Magnus Chase. My son finally did something right. He brought me a child of Frey as part of his Wehrguild payment. And now, this boy Magnus Chase will be my permanent house guest. We will start a line for photo ops at the bar." "Hold up," I said. "That was not the deal, Alderman. We're not staying past this party." Hearthstone signed, "Father, the ring, dangerous. Take it off." The crowd stirred restlessly, not sure what to make of this. Alderman's smile eroded, his eyes narrowed. "My son is asking me to take off my new ring." He held up his hand and wiggled his finger, letting the gold band catch the light. "Now why would he ask that? And why would Magnus Chase threaten to leave? Unless these scoundrels are planning to steal my treasure." Blitzen scoffed. "They just brought you that treasure, you daft elf. Why would they steal it again?" "So you admit it." Alderman clapped his hands. All the doors to the living room slammed shut. Around the perimeter of the room, a dozen columns of water erupted from the floor and formed vaguely humanoid shapes, like balloon animals filled with water, minus the balloons. Blitzen yelped, "Those are security knocks." "What?" I asked. "Also called Nixies," he said. "Water spirits. Bad news." Hearthstone caught Inga's arm. He signed, "You still have family in woods?"
Yes, she said.
"Go now," he said. "I release you from my family service. Don't come back. Also, call police." Inga looked stunned and hurt, but then she glanced at the water spirit surrounding the crowd below. She pecked Hearthstone on the cheek.
I love you.
She vanished in a puff of fresh laundry-scented smoke. Blitzen arched his eyebrow. Did I miss something? Hearthstone shot him an irritated look, but he didn't have time to explain. Down in the living room, an older elf shouted, "Alderman, what is the meaning of this?"
"The meaning, Lord Mayor?"
Alderman grinned with an intensity that was not at all sane.
"I now understand why you all came here. You meant to steal my treasure, but I've caught you gold-handed. Security knocks, subdue these thieves. No one leaves here alive."
Etiquette tip. If you're looking for the right time to leave a party, when the host yells, "No one leaves here alive," that's your cue. Elves screamed and ran for the exits, but the glass doors were shut fast. Security Nixies moved through the crowd, changing shape from animal-like to human-like to solid wave, enveloping the elves one by one and leaving them passed out on the floor in elegant wet lumps. Meanwhile, Alderman laughed and danced around the room, retrieving his gold trinkets from his fallen guests.
"We've got to get out of here, now," Blitzen said.
"But we need to help the elves," I said. True, with the exception of Hearthstone, I didn't think much of the elves I'd met. I liked the guppies in Anvari's pond more. But I also couldn't stand the idea of leaving 400 people at the mercy of Mr. Alderman and his liquid Nixie thugs. I pulled out my pendant and summoned Jack.
"Hey, guys," Jack said.
"What's going on, Nox? Are you kidding me? There's nothing to cut with these guys." "Just do what you can," I yelled.
"Too late," Hearthstone signed. "Violins."
I wasn't sure if I'd read that last sign correctly. Then I looked downstairs. Half the Nixies had stationed themselves around the room in humanoid form and were pulling out solid violins and bows from, well, somewhere inside their liquid selves. That seemed like a very bad place to store stringed instruments, but the Nixies raised the wooden violins to their watery chins.
"Ears!" Blitz warned.
I clamped my hands to the sides of my head just as the Nox began to play. It only helped a little. The dirge was so sad and dissonant, my knees wobbled. Tears welled in my eyes. All around the room, more elves collapsed in fits of weeping, except Mr. Alderman, who seemed immune. He kept cackling and skipping around, occasionally kicking his VIP guests in the face. From inside his terry cloth hood, Blitzen let out a muffled yell.
"Make it stop or we'll die of broken hearts in a matter of minutes!"
I didn't think he was being metaphoric. Thankfully, Hearthstone was not affected. He snapped his fingers for attention, then pointed at Jack. "Sword, cut violins."
"You heard him," I told Jack.
"No, I didn't," Jack complained.
"Kill the violins!"
"Oh, that will be a pleasure." Jack flew into action. Meanwhile, Hearthstone fished out a runestone. He tossed it from the top of the stairs and it exploded in midair, making a giant glowing H shape above the heads of the elves. Outside, the sky darkened. Rain hammered against the plate glass windows, drowning out the sound of the violins. "Follow me," Hearthstone ordered. He clambered down the stairs as the storm intensified. Giant hailstones slammed into the windows, cracking the glass, causing the whole house to tremble. I pressed my hand to my waist, making sure the Skofnung stone was still secure. Then I ran after Hearth. Jack flew from knock to knock, chopping up their violins and crushing the hopes and dreams of some very talented Nixie musicians. The water creatures lashed out at Jack. They didn't seem capable of hurting the sword any more than Jack could hurt them, but Jack kept them occupied long enough for us to reach the bottom of the stairs. Hearthstone paused and raised his arms. With a tremendous boom, every window and glass door in the house shattered. Hail swept in, pummeling the elves, Holder, and Nixies alike.
"Let's go!" I yelled to the crowd. "Come on!"
"Fools!" Alderman cried.
"You are mine! You cannot escape!"
We did our best to herd everyone into the yard. Being outside felt like running through a hurricane of baseballs, but it was better than dying surrounded by knock fiddlers. I wished I'd had the good sense to cover myself in bath towels like Blitzen. Elves scattered and fled. The Nixies rushed after us, but the hail made them sluggish, slamming into them and forming icy froth until they looked like slushies escaped from their big gold cups. We were halfway across the lawn, heading for the wilderness, when I heard the sirens. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw emergency lights flashing as police cars and ambulances pulled into the main drive. Above us, the dark clouds began to break up. The hail subsided. I caught Hearthstone as he stumbled. I almost thought we would make it to the woods when a voice behind us shouted, "Stop!" 50 yards away, our old friends, Officers Wildflower and Sunspot, had drawn their firearms and were preparing to shoot us for loitering, trespassing, or running away without permission.
"Jack!" I yelled.
My sword rocketed toward the cops and sliced off their utility belts. Their pants promptly fell around their ankles. Elves, I discovered, should never wear shorts. They have pale, gangly legs that are not at all elegant or graceful. While they tried to recover their dignity, we plunged into the woods. Hearthstone's strength was nearly gone. He leaned on me as we ran, but I'd had a lot of practice carrying him. Jack flew to my side.
"That was fun," he announced.
"Afraid I just slowed them down, though. I'm sensing a good place to make a cut just up ahead."
"Make a cut?" I asked.
"He means between worlds," Blitzen said. "I don't know about you, but to me, any of the other 8 would be preferable right about now." We staggered into the clearing where the old well had been. Hearthstone shook his head weakly. He signed with one hand, pointing in different directions. "Anywhere but here." Blitzen turned to me.
"What is this place?"
"It's where Hearth's brother, you know." Blitzen seemed to shrink under his mound of towels.
"Oh."
"It's the best spot, guys," Jack insisted. "There's a real thin portal between the worlds right on top of that cairn. I can't..." Behind us, a shot rang out. Everyone flinched except Hearthstone. Something buzzed past my ear like an annoying insect.
"Do it, Jack!" I yelled.
He raced to the cairn, his blade sliced through the air, opening a rift into absolute darkness.
"I love darkness," Blitzen said. "Come on!"
Together, we hauled Hearthstone toward Peasen Well's old lair, and jumped into the space between the worlds. Chapter 30. Somewhere over the rainbow, there's some messed up stuff going on. We tumbled down some steps to a concrete landing. The three of us lay there in a heap, gasping and stunned. We appeared to be in an emergency stairwell, exposed brick walls, industrial green handrail, fire extinguishers, and illuminated exit signs. Just above us, the nearest metal door was stenciled with the words, Floor 6. I patted frantically at my waist, but the Skofnung stone was still lashed there securely, undamaged. Jack had returned to pendant form. He rested comfortably on my chain while all the energy he'd expended fighting the Nixies drained out of my soul. My bones felt leaden. My vision swam. Who knew slicing up violins and cutting the pants off police officers took so much effort? Hearthstone wasn't in much better shape. He clawed at the handrail to pull himself up, but his legs didn't seem to be working. I might have thought he was drunk, but I'd never seen him consume anything stronger than Diet Sergeant Pepper in need of a leer. Blitzen tugged off his bath towel burka. "We're in Midgard," he announced. "I know that smell anywhere." To me, the stairwell smelled only like wet elf, dwarf, and Magnus, but I took Blitz's word for it. Harsh stumbled, a red stain soaking his shirt.
"Buddy," Blitz rushed to his side, "what happened?"
"Whoa, Hearth," I made him sit down and examined the wound.
"Gunshot. Our friendly elfish police officers gave him a parting gift."
Blitz pulled off his Frank Sinatra hat and punched right through it.
"Can we please go 24 hours without one of us getting mortally wounded?"
"Relax," I said. "It just grazed his ribs. Hold him steady." I signed to Hearth, "Not bad. I can heal." I pressed my hand to the wound. Warmth radiated through Hearthstone's side. He took a sharp inhale, then began to breathe more easily. The gouge in his skin closed up. Until I took away my hand, I didn't realize how worried I'd been. My whole body was shaking. I hadn't tried my healing power since Blitzen had been stabbed, and I guess I was afraid they wouldn't work anymore. "See?" I tried for a confident smile, though it probably looked like I was having a stroke. "All better." "Thanks," Hearth signed. "You're still weaker than I'd like," I said. "We'll rest here a minute. Tonight you'll need a good meal, lots of fluid, and sleep."
"Dr. Chase has spoken," Blitz scowled at the elf. "And no more running into stray bullets, you hear me?"
The corner of Hearth's mouth twitched. "I can't hear you. I am deaf."
"Humor," I noted. "That's a good sign."
We sat together and enjoyed the novelty of not being hunted, wounded, or terrified. Well, okay, I was still pretty terrified, but one out of three wasn't bad. The full suckage of our last 30-something hours in Alfheim started to sink in. I wanted to believe we'd left that crazy place behind for good. No more trigger-happy cops, manicured estates, or eye-stabbing sunlight. No more Mr. Alderman. But I couldn't forget what Anvari had told us. Soon I would learn the price of stolen gifts, and Hearthstone was fated to return home again.
"You've only delayed a much more dangerous reckoning."
The Othala runestone still sat atop the cairn where Andoran had died. I had a feeling that someday Hearthstone would have to retrieve that missing letter of his cosmic alphabet, whether he wanted to or not. I stared at Hearth as he flapped his shirt, trying to dry the blood on it. When he finally met my eyes, I signed, "I'm sorry about your dad." He half-nodded, half-shrugged.
"The curse of Fafnir," I said. "Can I ask?"
Blitzen cleared his throat.
"Maybe we should wait on that until he's at full strength."
"It's okay," Hearth signed. He leaned against the wall, steadying himself so he could use both hands for signing. Fafnir was a dwarf. Anvari's ring drove him crazy. He murdered his father, took his gold, guarded the treasure in a cave. Eventually, he turned into a dragon. I swallowed. "The ring can do that?"
Blitzen tugged at his beard.
"The ring brings out the worst in people, kid. Maybe Mr. Alderman doesn't have that much evil inside him. Maybe he'll just stay an unpleasant elf and win the lottery."
I remembered Hearth's father cackling as he kicked his guests, dancing around as his Nixies attacked the crowd. Whatever Alderman had inside him, I doubted it was a fuzzy kitten. I looked at the top of the stairwell, where a sign said roof access.
"We should find Sam," I said.
We're supposed to talk to the god Heimdall and get directions to some place in Jotunheim.
Kid?
Blitzen's eye twitched. I think Harth might need a little more quiet time before we meet up with Samira and go racing off to fight giants. I could use some rest, too.
Right. I felt bad bringing up our to-do list. Too many people to meet, too many dangerous worlds to visit. 3 days left to find Thor's hammer. So far, we'd found a hot lady sword in a blue rock, barely managed not to get ourselves killed, and driven Hearthstone's father criminally insane. About par for the course.
You want to crash at Valhalla for the night? I asked.
Blitzen grunted. The Thanes don't like mortals mixing with the honored dead. You go ahead. I'll take Harth the Need of Valir and let him rest at my place. His tanning bed is all set up.
But how will you get there?
Blitz shrugged. Like I told you before, there's tons of entrances to Dwarf World underneath Midgard.
Probably one in the basement of this building. If not, we'll just find the nearest sewer.
Yes, Harth signed. We love sewers.
Don't you start with the sarcasm, Blitz said.
Kid, how about we meet tomorrow morning at the old rendezvous point?
I couldn't help but smile at the memories of the good old days, hanging out with Harth and Blitz, wondering where our next meal would come from and when we would next get mugged. The good old days really sucked. But they'd sucked in a less complicated way than the crazy new days. The old rendezvous point it is. I hugged them both. I didn't want Harth or Blitz to leave, but neither of them was in any shape to face more danger tonight. And I wasn't sure what I would find up on the roof. I unfastened the Skofnung stone from my belt and handed it to Blitz.
Hold on to that. Keep it safe.
We will, Blitz promised.
And kid.
Thanks.
They staggered down the stairwell, arm in arm, leaning on each other for support.
Stop stepping on my toes, Blitz grumbled. Have you put on weight?
No, lead with your left foot, you silly elf. There you go.
I climbed to the top of the stairwell, wondering where in Midgard I had ended up. Annoying fact about traveling between worlds. You often pop up exactly where you need to be, whether you want to be there or not. 4 people I knew already stood on the rooftop, though I had no idea why. Sam and Amir were having a hushed argument at the base of a huge illuminated billboard. And not just any billboard, I realized. Towering above us was the famous Boston Citgo sign, a 60-foot square of LEDs that washed the rooftop in white, orange, and blue. Sitting on the edge of the roof, looking very bored, were Halfborn Gunderson and Alex Fierro. Sam and Amir were too busy arguing to notice me, but Halfborn nodded in greeting. He didn't seem surprised. I walked over to my fellow in Harriar.
Sup?
Alex skipped a piece of gravel across the roof.
Oh, so much fun. Samira wanted to bring Amir to see the Citgo sign. Something about rainbows. She needed a male relative as a chaperone.
I blinked.
So you, Alex gave me an exaggerated at-your-service bow. I'm her male relative.
I had a moment of reality-flipping vertigo as I realized that, yes, indeed, Alex Fierro was presently a he. I'm not sure how I knew, other than the fact that he had told me so. His wardrobe wasn't gender-specific. He wore his usual rose high tops and skinny green jeans and a pink long-sleeve t-shirt. His hair, if anything, seemed a little longer. Still green with black roots, now combed to one side in the shape of a wave.
My pronouns are he and him, Alex confirmed. And you can stop staring.
I caught myself. Arguing would have been pointless. Halfborn, what are you doing here? The berserker grinned. He'd put on a Bruins t-shirt and jeans, maybe to blend in with the mortals, though the battle axe strapped across his back was sort of a giveaway.
Oh, me? I'm chaperoning the chaperone. And my gender hasn't changed, thanks for asking.
Alex smacked him, which would have made Mallory Keene proud.
Ow! Halfborn complained. You hit hard for an Augur.
What have I told you about that term? Alex said. I will decide what is manly, unmanly, womanly, or unwomanly for me. Don't make me kill you again.
Halfborn rolled his eyes.
You killed me one time, and it wasn't even a fair fight. I got you back at lunch.
Whatever.
I stared at the two of them. It dawned on me that, over the last day and a half, they had become friends. In the sort of trash-talking, murdering-each-other way hallmates bonded on Floor 19. Alex slipped his garrote from his belt loops.
So, Magnus, did you manage to heal your dwarf?
Yeah. You heard about that?
Sam filled us in.
He started to make a cat's cradle with his wire, somehow managing not to cut off his own fingers in the process.
I wondered if it was a good sign that Samira had shared information with Alex. Maybe they'd started to trust each other. Or maybe Sam's desperation to stop Loki had simply overridden her caution. I wanted to ask Alex about the dream I'd had of Loki in his suite. Asking Alex for a simple request while Alex threw pots at him. I decided maybe this wasn't the time, especially with Fiero's garrote so close to my neck. Alex pointed with his chin to Sam and Amir. You should go on over. They've been waiting for you. The happy couple was still arguing. Sam making imploring gestures with her upraised palms, Amir tugging at his hair as if he wanted to pull his brains out. I frowned at Halfborn. How could they know I would be here? I didn't even know.
Odin's ravens, Halfborn said, as if that was a perfectly logical explanation. By all means, go over and interrupt. They're not getting anywhere with their argument, and I'm bored.
Halfborn's definition of boredom was, I am not killing anyone at the moment, nor am I watching someone get killed in an interesting way. Therefore, I was not anxious to alleviate it. Nevertheless, I approached Sam and Amir. Happily, Samira did not impale me with her axe. She even looked relieved to see me. Magnus, good. The light of the Sitgo sign washed over her, turning her hijab the color of tree bark. Is Blitzen okay? He's better. I told her what had happened, though she seemed distracted. Her eyes kept drifting back to Amir, who was still trying to pull out his brain. So, I wrapped up. What have you guys been up to? Amir barked a laugh.
Oh, you know, the usual.
The poor guy didn't sound like he was casting with a full bag of runes. I glanced at his hands to make sure he wasn't wearing a new cursed ring. Sam steepled her fingers in front of her mouth. I hope she didn't plan on piloting airplanes today because she looked exhausted.
Magnus, Amir and I have been talking on and off since you left. I brought him here hoping to show him proof.
Proof of what? I asked. Amir spread his arms.
Gods, apparently. The Nine Worlds, proof that our whole life is a lie.
Amir, our life isn't a lie, Sam's voice quivered. It's just more complicated than you realized.
He shook his head, his hair now sticking up like an angry rooster's comb.
Sam, running restaurants is complicated. Pleasing my dad and my grandparents and your grandparents is complicated. Waiting another 2 years to marry you when all I want is to be with you, that is complicated. But this? Valkyries? Gods? In hair? I can't even pronounce that word.
Samira might have been blushing. It was hard to tell with the lights.
I want to be with you too. Her voice was quiet but filled with conviction. And I'm trying to show you.
Being in the middle of their conversation, I felt about as awkward as an elf in swim trunks. I also felt guilty, because I'd encouraged Sam to be honest with Amir. I told her he was strong enough to handle the truth. I didn't want to be proven wrong. My instinct was to back off and leave them alone, but I got the feeling Sam and Amir were only being this open with each other because they had three chaperones. I will never understand these betrothed teenagers nowadays. Sam, I said, if you're just trying to show him proof of weirdness, bust out your blazing spear, fly around the roof. You can do a million things, none of which are meant to be seen by mortals, she said bitterly. It's a paradox, Magnus. I'm not supposed to reveal my powers to a mortal. So if I try to do it on purpose, my powers won't work. I say, hey, look at me fly, and suddenly I can't fly.
That doesn't make any sense, I said.
Thank you, Amir agreed. Sam stomped her foot. You try it, Magnus. Show Amir you're an Inherhi. Jump to the top of the Sitgo sign. I glanced up. 60 feet. Tough, but doable. Yet just thinking about it made my muscles feel wobbly. My strength abandoned me. I suspected that if I tried, I'd hop 6 inches and make a fool out of myself. Which would no doubt be very entertaining to Halfborn and Alex.
I see your point, I admitted.
But what about Hearthstone and me disappearing from the plane? I turned to Amir. You noticed that, right? Amir looked lost.
I think so. Sam keeps reminding me about it, but it's getting fuzzier.
Were you on that flight?
Sam sighed. His mind is trying to compensate. Amir's more flexible than Barry, who forgot about you guys as soon as we landed, but still.
I met Sam's eyes, and I realized why she was so worried. By explaining her life to Amir, she was doing more than just being honest. She was literally trying to reconfigure her boyfriend's mind. If she succeeded, she might open up his perception. He would see the Nine Worlds as we did. If she failed, best case, Amir might eventually forget it all. His mind would gloss over everything that had happened. Worst case scenario? The experience would leave permanent scars. He might never fully recover. Either way, how could he look at Samira in the same way again? He would always have a nagging doubt that something was off, not quite right.
Okay, I said. So why did you bring him here?
Because, Sam started, like she'd already explained this 20 times tonight, the easiest supernatural thing for mortals to see is the Bifrost Bridge.
We need to find Heimdall anyway, right? I thought if I could teach Amir to see the Bifrost, that might permanently expand his senses.
The Bifrost, I said. The Rainbow Bridge to Asgard.
Yes.
I looked up at the Citgo sign, New England's largest illuminated billboard, which had been advertising gasoline over Kenmore Square for about a century.
You're telling me it is the brightest stationary point in Boston, Sam said. The Rainbow Bridge doesn't always anchor here, but most of the time...
Guys! Amir interrupted.
Really, you don't have to prove anything to me. I'll take your word for it.
He let out a nervous laugh.
I love you, Sam. I believe you. I may be having a nervous breakdown, but that's fine. That's fine. Let's go do something else.
I understood why Amir wanted to walk away. I'd seen some crazy stuff. Talking swords, knitting zombies, the world's wealthiest freshwater grouper. But even I had trouble believing that the Citgo sign was the gateway to Asgard.
Listen, man, I grabbed his shoulders. I figured physical contact was my biggest advantage. Samira was prohibited from touching him until they were married. But there was nothing quite as convincing as shaking some sense into a friend.
You have to try, okay?
I know you're a Muslim, and you don't believe in a bunch of gods.
They're not gods, Sam volunteered. They're just powerful entities.
Whatever, I said. Dude, I'm an atheist. I don't believe in anything. And yet, this stuff is real. It's some messed up stuff, but it's real.
Amir bit his lip. I don't know, Magnus. This makes me very uncomfortable.
I know, man. I could tell he was trying to listen, but I felt like I was yelling at him while he was wearing noise-canceling headphones.
It makes me uncomfortable, too. Some of the stuff I've learned...
I stopped. I decided this wasn't the time to bring up my cousin Annabeth and the Greek gods. I didn't want to give Amir an aneurysm.
Focus on me, I ordered. Look in my eyes. Can you do that?
A bead of sweat trickled down the side of his face. With the effort of somebody lifting 300 pounds, he managed to meet my gaze.
Okay, now listen, I said. Repeat after me.
We are going to look up together.
We are going to look up together.
We are going to see a rainbow bridge, I said.
We are going to...
His voice cracked.
See a rainbow bridge.
And our brains will not explode.
Not explode.
1, 2, 3. We looked. And crud. There it was. The perspective of the world seemed to shift. So we were looking at the Citgo sign from a 45-degree angle rather than a perpendicular one. From the top of the sign, a burning sheet of colors arced into the night sky.
Amir, I said, are you seeing this?
I don't believe it. He muttered in a tone that made it clear he saw.
Thank Allah, Sam said, smiling brighter than I'd ever seen. Most merciful, most compassionate.
Then from the heavens spoke a voice both squeaky and undivine.
Hey, guys! Come on up!
Chapter 31. Heimdall takes a selfie with literally everyone. Amir almost pulled an Inherii move. He would have jumped 60 feet if I hadn't been holding on to him.
What was that? He demanded.
Samira beamed.
You heard him? That's fantastic! It's just Heimdall inviting us up.
Up like... up? Amir inched away from the Citgo sign.
How was that fantastic?
Halfborn and Alex strolled over to join us.
Will you look at that? Alex didn't sound particularly impressed by the cosmic bridge arcing into the sky. Is it safe?
Halfborn tilted his head.
Probably, if Heimdall invited them. Otherwise they'll burn to ash as soon as they set foot on the rainbow.
What?
Amir yelped.
We're not going to burn, Sam glared at Halfborn. We'll be just fine.
I'm in, Alex announced. You two crazy kids still need an escort so you don't do anything irresponsible.
Irresponsible?
Amir's voice went up another half octave.
Like climbing into the sky on a burning rainbow?
It's okay, man, I said, though I realized my definition of okay had become flexible over the last few months.
Halfborn crossed his arms.
You all have fun. I'm staying right here.
Why? Alex asked. Scared?
The berserker laughed. I've met Heimdall before. It's an honor I only need once.
I didn't like the sound of that.
Why? What's he like?
You'll see, Halfborn smirked.
I'll meet you back in Valhalla. Have fun exploring interdimensional space.
Sam grinned. Amir, I can't wait to show you. Come on.
She stepped toward the Sitgo sign and vaporized in a smear of multicolored light.
Sam? Amir yelled.
Oh, cool. Alex leaped forward and also disappeared. I clapped Amir's shoulder.
They're fine. Stay strong, man. Now I get to pay you back for all those falafel plates you spotted me when I was homeless. I get to show you the 9 worlds.
Amir took a deep breath. To his credit, he didn't collapse, curl into a ball, or cry, all of which would have been perfectly acceptable responses to finding out there were squeaky-voiced beings in the sky who would invite you up their rainbow.
Magnus, he said.
Yeah?
Remind me not to give you any more falafel.
Together we stepped into the orange glow.
Nothing to see here, just 4 teenagers hiking up a nuclear rainbow.
Radiance surrounded us, fuzzy and hot. Rather than walking across a slick, solid surface, I felt like we were wading through a waist-high field of wheat. If that wheat were made of highly radioactive light. Somehow, I'd lost my sunglasses from Alfheim. I doubted they would have helped, though. This light was intense in a different way. The colors made my eyes throb like twin hearts. The heat seemed to swirl a millimeter from my skin. Under our feet, the bridge made a low-pitched rumble like the recording of an explosion played on a loop. I supposed Halfborn Gunderson was right. Without Heimdall's blessing, we would have been vaporized the moment we set foot on the Bifrost. Behind us, the cityscape of Boston became an indistinct blur. The sky turned black and full of stars like I used to see on my old hiking trips with my mom. The memory caught in my throat. I thought about the smell of campfires and toasting marshmallows, Mom and I telling each other stories, making up new constellations like the Twinkie and the Wombat, and laughing ourselves silly. We walked for so long I began to wonder if there was anything at the other end of the rainbow. Forget pots of gold and leprechauns, forget Asgard. Maybe this was a practical joke. Heimdall might just cause the Bifrost to disappear and leave us floating in the void.
You're right, his squeaky voice would announce. We don't exist, LOL.
Gradually, the darkness grayed. On the horizon rose the skyline of another city, gleaming walls, golden gates, and behind them, the spires and domes of the gods' palaces. I'd only seen Asgard once before, from the inside, looking out a window in Valhalla. From a distance, it was even more impressive. I imagined charging up this bridge with an invading army of giants. I was pretty sure I'd lose hope when I saw that vast fortress. And standing on the bridge in front of us, his legs planted wide, was a tall warrior with a huge sword. I'd imagined a god who was suave and cool, a movie star type. Real-life Heimdall was kind of a disappointment. He wore a padded cloth tunic and woolly leggings, all beige, so he picked up the colors of the Bifrost. It was camouflage, I realized, the perfect way to blend into a rainbow. His hair was white-blonde and fuzzy like ram's wool. His grinning face was darkly tanned, which might have been the result of standing on a radioactive bridge for thousands of years. I hoped he didn't plan on having kids someday. In general, he looked like that goofy guy you didn't want to sit next to on the school bus, except for two things. His unsheathed sword, which was almost as tall as he was, and the huge curled ram's horn slung over his left shoulder. The horn and sword looked imposing, though they were both so large they kept knocking into one another. I got the feeling that if Heimdall killed you, it would only be because he got clumsy and tripped. As we approached, he waved enthusiastically, making his sword and horn bang into one another.
Clink, donk, clink, donk. What's up, guys?
The four of us stopped. Sam bowed.
Lord Heimdall.
Alex looked at her like, Lord? Next to me, Amir pinched the bridge of his nose.
I cannot believe what I'm seeing.
Heimdall arched his fluffy eyebrows. His irises were rings of pure alabaster.
Ooh, what are you seeing?
He gazed past us into the void.
You mean the guy in Cincinnati with the gun? No, he's okay. He's just going to the firing range. Or do you mean that fire giant in Muspelheim?
He is coming this way.
No, hold on, he tripped. That was hilarious. I wish I'd vined that.
I tried to follow Heimdall's gaze, but I saw nothing but empty space and stars.
What are you... My eyesight is really good, explained the god. I can see into all of the 9 worlds. And my hearing! I was listening to you guys argue on that rooftop from all the way up here. That's why I decided to throw you a rainbow.
Samira gulped.
You, heard us arguing?
Heimdall smiled.
The whole thing! You two are just too cute! In fact, could I get a selfie with you before we talk business?
Amir said,
Great!
Heimdall fumbled with his horn and his sword. Do you need some help? I asked.
No, I got it.
Alex Fierro sidled up next to me. Besides, that wouldn't be nearly as funny.
I can hear you, Alex, the god warned. I can hear corn growing 500 miles away. I can hear frost giants belching in their castles in Jotunheim. I can definitely hear you. But not to worry, I take selfies all the time. Now let's see.
He fiddled with his massive ram's horn as if looking for a button. Meanwhile, his sword rested at a precarious angle in the crook of his arm, the 6-foot-long blade leaning toward us. I wonder what Jack would think of that sword. Whether it was a hot lady or a professional linebacker, or maybe both.
Aha!
Heimdall must have found the right button. His horn shrank it to the largest smartphone I'd ever seen, its screen the size of a Sicilian pizza square, its case made of shiny ram's horn.
Your horn is a phone? Amir asked. I think technically it's a phablet, Heimdall said. But yes, this is Gyalar, the horn and or phablet of Doomsday. I blow this baby once, the gods know there's trouble in Asgard, and they come running. I blow it twice, then it's Ragnarok, baby.
He seemed delighted by the idea that he could signal the start of the final battle that destroyed the 9 worlds.
Most of the time, I just use it for photos and texting and whatnot.
That's not scary at all, Alex said. Heimdall laughed.
You have no idea. Once, I butt-dialed the apocalypse. So embarrassing. I had to text everybody on my contact list, like, false alarm. A lot of gods came running anyway. I made this gif of them charging up the Bifrost and realizing there was no battle. Priceless.
Amir blinked repeatedly, perhaps because Heimdall was a moist talker.
You are in charge of Doomsday? You're really,
an Aesir? Heimdall said.
Yep, I'm one of Odin's sons. But between us, Amir, I think Samira is right.
He leaned in so the people in the cornfields 500 miles away couldn't hear him.
Frankly, I don't think of us as gods either. I mean, once you've seen Thor passed out on the floor, or Odin in his bathrobe yelling at Frigg because she used his toothbrush, it's hard to see much divinity in my family. Like my moms used to say.
Moms, plural? Amir asked.
Yeah, I was born of 9 mothers.
How?
Don't ask. It's a pain on Mother's Day. 9 different phone calls, 9 flower bouquets. When I was a kid, trying to cook 9 breakfasts in beds. Oh, man. Anyway, let's get this picture.
He corralled Sam and Amir, who looked stunned to have the grinning face of a god wedged between them. Heimdall held out his phablet, but his arm wasn't long enough. I cleared my throat. You sure you don't want me to...
No! No one can hold the mighty phablet Gyalar except me. But it's fine. Time out for a second, guys.
Heimdall stepped back and fumbled with his phone and sword some more, apparently trying to attach them to each other. After a bit of awkward maneuvering, and probably several butt calls to the apocalypse, he held out the sword in triumph, the phablet now hooked on the point.
Ta-da! My best invention yet!
You invented the selfie stick, Alex said. I was wondering who to blame for that.
It's a selfie sword, actually.
Heimdall wedged his face between Sam and Amir.
Say Gamelost!
Gyalar flashed. More fumbling as Heimdall retrieved his phone from the tip of his sword and inspected the picture.
Perfect!
He proudly showed us the shot as if we hadn't been there when it was taken 3 seconds ago. Has anyone ever told you you're crazy? Alex asked.
Crazy fun, Heimdall said. Come on, check out some of these other shots.
He gathered the 4 of us around his phablet and started flipping through his photo stream, though I was pretty distracted by how much Heimdall smelled like wet sheep. He showed us a majestic picture of the Taj Mahal with Heimdall's face looming large in the foreground. Then Valhalla's dining hall, fuzzy and indistinct, with Heimdall's total eclipse of a nose in perfect focus. Then the President of the United States giving a State of the Union address with Heimdall photobombing. Pictures of all the 9 worlds, all selfies.
Wow, I said. Those are... consistent.
I don't like my shirt in this picture.
He showed us a shot of elfish police beating a hulder with nightsticks. Heimdall grinning in front, wearing a blue-striped polo.
But, oh, somewhere in here I've got this amazing photo of Asgard, with me making this angry face and pretending to eat Odin's palace.
Heimdall, Samira interrupted. Those are really interesting, but we were hoping for your help.
Hmm? Oh, you want a picture with all five of us? Maybe with Asgard in the background?
Sure.
Actually,
Sam said,
we're looking for Thor's hammer.
All the excitement went out of Heimdall's alabaster eyes.
Oh, not that again. I told Thor I couldn't see anything. Every day he calls me, texts me, sends me unsolicited pictures of his goats. Look harder, look harder. I'm telling you, it's nowhere. See for yourself.
He flipped through more shots.
No hammer? No hammer? There's me with Beyonce, but no hammer? I should probably make that my profile picture.
You know what? Alex stretched. I'm just going to lie down over here and not kill anybody annoying, okay? He lay on his back on the Bifrost, stuck out his arms, and leisurely waved them through the light, making rainbow angels.
Yeah, I said. Heimdall, I know it's a drag, but do you think you could take another look for us? We think Mjolnir is hidden underground, so...
Well, that would explain it. I can only see through solid rock for, like, a mile at most, if it's deeper than that.
Right, Sam jumped in. The thing is, we kind of know who took it. A giant named Thrym.
Thrym!
Heimdall looked offended, as if that was someone he would never deign to take a selfie with.
That horrid, ugly...
He wants to marry Sam, Amir said.
But he won't, Sam said.
Heimdall leaned on his sword.
Well now, that's a dilemma. I could tell you where Thrym is easy enough. But he wouldn't be stupid enough to keep the hammer in his fortress.
We know. I figured we were close to the end of Heimdall's attention span, but I told him about Loki's nefarious wedding plans, the Skofnung's sword and stone, the deadline of 3 more days, and Goat Killer, who might or might not be on our side, telling us to find Heimdall and ask for directions. Every so often I randomly tossed in the word selfie to keep the gods' interest.
Said Heimdall. In that case, I'd be happy to scan the 9 worlds again and find this Goat Killer person. Let me set up my selfie sword again.
Perhaps, Amir suggested, if you simply looked without using your phone?
Heimdall stared at our mortal friend. Amir had said what we'd all been thinking, which was a pretty brave thing to do his first time in Norse outer space. But I was afraid Heimdall might decide to use his sword for something other than wide-angle shots. Fortunately, Heimdall just patted Amir's shoulder.
It's all right, Amir. I know you're confused about the 9 worlds and whatnot, but I'm afraid you're saying words that don't make any sense. Please, Heimdall, Sam said. I know it seems strange, but gazing directly at the 9 worlds might give you a fresh perspective.
The god looked unconvinced.
Surely there's another way to find your goat killer. Maybe I can blow Gialar and get the gods up here. We could ask them if they've seen...
No! We all screamed at once. Alex came in a little late as he was still lying down making light angels. He may have added a few colorful modifiers to his no.
Humph!
Heimdall scowled.
Well, this is highly unorthodox. But I don't want to see a big ugly giant come between a cute couple like you two.
Heimdall wagged his finger between me and Sam. Actually it's those two, I corrected, pointing to Amir. Over in the rainbow, Alex snorted.
Right, of course, Heimdall said. Sorry. You guys look very different when you're not in the camera app. Perhaps you have a point about a fresh perspective. Let's see what we can find in the 9 worlds.
Chapter 32. Godzilla sends me an important message. Heimdall gazed into the distance and immediately stumbled backward.
9 mothers of me!
Alex Fierro sat up, suddenly interested. What is it? Heimdall's cheeks were turning the same sheep-like color as his hair.
Giants. A lot of them. They appear to be massing on the borders of Midgard.
I wonder what other threats Heimdall had missed while he was photobombing the president. Between this guy and Hammerless Thor, it was no wonder the safety of Asgard depended on unprepared, undertrained people like, well, us. Sam managed to keep her voice level.
We know about the giants, Lord Heimdall. They suspect Thor's hammer is missing. Unless we get it back soon.
Yes!
Heimdall licked his lips.
I...
I suppose you did say something like that.
He cupped his ear and listened.
They're talking about a wedding. Thrym's wedding. One of the giant generals. He's grumbling because they have to wait until it is over before they can invade. Apparently Thrym has promised them some good news after the ceremony. Something that will make their invasion much easier.
An alliance with Loki, I guessed? Though something about that didn't seem quite right. There had to be more.
Also, Heimdall continued, Thrym has said, yes, his own forces won't join the invasion until after the wedding. He's warned the other armies it would be rude to start the war without him. I don't think the giants are scared of Thrym, but from what I'm overhearing, they're terrified of his sister,